And welcome to Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Medow with you for the next 60 minutes as we'll break down everything related to the New York Giants. We'll get to your phone calls, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. And I thought that we'd start off today's program. There have been some recent postseason awards that have been handed out, some postseason teams that have been named. And the most recent one, Paul, is by the Pro Football Writers Association.
Yes.
And they gave out a number of different team awards in terms of all NFC team, all AFC, as well as all rookie team. And the Giants had a number of representatives, and probably the two guys that are showing up, it seems, across the board. No surprises on the defensive side. Let's start there. Damon Snacks Harrison, as well as Landon Collins, both getting nods on the PFWA All-NFL team.
Now, Collins seems to be a unanimous pick no matter whose list comes out.
Correct.
Everybody's got Landon Collins on it. Snacks, for some reason, didn't get to go to the Pro Bowl, but he got to be on everybody else's
which
list.
It's so hard to believe, by the way.
Well, because, you
it's
know,
a popularity contest.
Yeah, it really is. And it's a shame because he is a popular guy. He's very affable, very well-spoken. He's funny. He's very good to the media. I don't know why, you know, the intangibles did not work out for him, and he's not getting to go to Orlando. By the way, it's not Hawaii this year. It is Orlando, Florida.
They did make the change. And it's also AFC versus NFC this year.
Which I love. Thank you, old school. Yes, back to the conference representatives.
Well, they were keeping you in mind when they made that
change.
Oh,
my goodness. The one of many evils that needs to be fixed in the
National
Football League.
No, it makes sense. Listen, in NBA, it's East versus West. You should have representatives of the conferences going
yes.
up against one another as opposed to fantasy teams. I'm in agreement there.
Yes. Okay. Now that we have that out of the way, we were actually talking about this yesterday. I was with John before we came back in here about the potential of maybe Snacks even getting into the Pro Bowl. And unfortunately, the problem is if you look at the Pro Bowl selections right now who are available, unless somebody drops out because of injury or decides not to go, you know, it's not like he can get snuck in there as an alternate. Remember, guys who get to the Super Bowl are disqualified from
Correct.
The Pro Bowl. Well, there are none of the defensive tackles from the four remaining teams on the Pro Bowl roster in the NFC. So he's not going to get in that way. Now, if somebody gets hurt, maybe, or has an injury and decides not to go, we were talking about how perhaps Sherman from Seattle had been injured in the last playoff game.
Yeah,
might he drop out and DRC maybe could sneak in?
That's a possibility. That makes sense.
You know, after he made second team All NFL, he certainly would be a consideration. Now, again, I know there's an alternate list based on their formula of votes and everything else, so I don't know where he is in terms of the alternates. But that would maybe be a possibility for another Giant to get in. The other one I thought was Alex Mack of the Falcons, if they should advance.
The offensive line.
Or even if he decides, look, I just played in the championship game in the NFC, I'm not going to go, might that open up a spot for Weston Richburg? Maybe. Those are the only two guys, though, I think, on the Giants who might sneak into the Pro Bowl as a late alternate selection.
Well, if you look at the interior defensive linemen that made the Pro Bowl on the NFC side, you had Aaron Donald from the Rams, you had Gerald McCoy from the Bucks, Fletcher Cox from the Eagles. All three players didn't make the playoffs, assuming they're
right.
full health and ready to go, you would expect them to show
now,
up.
No, I would have taken Snacks over Fletcher Cox, to be honest with you.
No,
I don't have a problem with the other two. But I thought Snacks was better than Cox this year.
Yeah, I mean, Cox had a great season, but
he did.
I think Snacks certainly deserved more consideration than he got when it came to at least the Pro Bowl conversation. But I think when you're evaluating players, and this is just me personally, Paul, All-Pro is a more significant award than necessarily Pro Bowl because All-Pro is more of people who have watched the game, people that have taken players into very close parameters in terms of the microscope as opposed to Pro Bowl, which is more of a popularity contest, fan vote is involved, and
no
so
doubt.
Forth. So I consider at least All-Pro nod much more
the
than
the only problem is the All-NFL All-Pro voting doesn't involve a trip to Orlando or to Hawaii for that matter.
It doesn't come with the benefits in terms of that, yes. So, I mean, from a player's perspective.
You want to take the kids to Disney? You got to get to the Pro Bowl.
Yes. Well, if you want to take the kids to Disney, you got to pay on your own time, essentially, is what you're alluding to. But real quickly, getting back to the PFWA all-rookie team as well as the all-NFC team. We mentioned that Snacks, as well as Landon Collins, made the All-NFC team. They also made the All-NFL team. And then Sterling Shepard made the All-Rookie team.
Yeah, and I thought that was obviously a warranted pick. Thomas from the Saints was the other wide receiver, and those were the two guys who had the biggest numbers of all the rookie wide receivers in the league this year.
Touchdowns.
They were. They were. And so, no argument for either one of those guys. The one that I thought was kind of shifty, didn't like it real much, Hargraves, from what I understand, had a real tough time in Tampa. Now, I know his tackle numbers are up, but he was not a good tackler. As a matter of fact, he missed a ton of tackles from the people in Tampa who I was talking to. Because I had made a comparison. I was trying to figure out, remember, the Giants took Apple, and Hargraves was the next corner on the board. And some people said if the Giants were going to take a corner, isn't Hargraves a better cover guy than Apple is? Well, the word coming out of college was that Apple's a better tackler than Hargraves. Apple is better in run support than Hargraves is. Hargraves may be better at shadowing skills, but Apple is the better all-around player and more fundamentally sound and also a better attitude. Well, we can vouch for Eli Apple. He's a great kid, and he's a really good player and has tremendous potential and has shown to be a good tackler, has shown to be valuable in run support. I'll be honest with you, just because I got to see Eli Apple every week, and I know he had his rookie mistakes, and I know he got burned a few times. Absolutely. But, you know, the people in Tampa, I mean, if you talk to their media down there, they complained about Hargraves being, you know, rather sloppy. So in that regard, I thought that maybe Apple would have gotten the nod for cornerback.
Well, the other corner, I could tell you, I don't think is really up for debate, Jalen Ramsey
of
the Jacksonville Jaguars, who had a great
run. Well, we all knew he was the best corner in the draft.
I mean, he's the other representative at corner, and then the safeties were Carl Joseph and Keanu Neal, who also had a very strong season for the Falcons. So, I mean, listen, I think you make a fair argument, Eli Apple, Vernon Hargraves. You know, Tampa Bay's defense did pull a 180. Maybe that helps his stock a little bit. If you remember, early in the season, the Bucs were a mess defensively, Paul, and then Mike Smith, their defensive coordinator, he flipped a switch. That's a big reason why they were in the playoffs.
What were the Giants last year? And despite all the veterans they added via free agency, Eli Apple was also a significant addition to this defense because he was a starting corner.
Absolutely. And then DRC moving into the slot enabled Eli Apple to have more of a role on the outside. He played a significant role on this defense.
That was the only argument that I had in terms of the all-NFL rookie team. I did think that Apple deserved a better shake there.
Well, it was nice to see, though, at least the defense get recognized. Specifically, they did a lot of the heavy lifting for the New York Giants. So that is the Professional Football Writers of America, those awards that were given out. You can see the full list on Giants.com. And for those of you watching the program on Twitter, we invite you over to Giants.com to watch the remainder of the program here. Lance Beto, Paul Dottino with you here on Giants.com as we just went over some of the postseason accolades for some of the members of the Giants. We're going to open up the phone lines at 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants chat. Now, just a quick side note, there are a few mock drafts that were released. We weren't planning on focusing the program on that, but if you do want to weigh in and you've done some studying, we're not necessarily going to turn you away. But now that all of a sudden the calendar has turned, the mock drafts are already up and running.
Before you go any further, can we put a big asterisk right here behind us on the wall to say, folks, free agency hasn't even started yet. So before we get real serious into any draft conversation, we'll entertain a couple of name drops if you want to do that. We'll take a glance at the guys who are being bantered about for the Giants at number 23. That's fine, but I don't want to go too heavy in this.
No, I agree with you.
It's ridiculous. Free agency is where you fill at least part of the holes of your Swiss cheese, and then you go to the draft after that.
And the playoffs have to finish up, too, before we even get to
it's ridiculous
discussion about free agency. But, you know, it's the offseason for some teams, and people like to at least capitalize and start thinking about what these teams are going to be focusing on. But there is an article on Giants.com which at least categorizes four different individuals who have mock drafts. So if you do want to take a look at that, you can head to the team's website. With that being said, let's open up the phone lines, and we will delve into whatever else you'd like to cover here on Giants.com. Big Blue Kickoff Live. We've got Kyle in Rye, New York. He gets us going. Kyle, what's happening?
Hi, I'd like to talk about the second year of players such as Dante Dayon, Darius Poe, and what do you think their expectations are in the year coming forward?
So you're referring to some of the players that were on the practice squad this season that were with the team in training camp and perhaps what they can do moving forward. And those were two names, Paul, that we had certainly discussed throughout the course of training camp. We actually brought up Dante Dion on yesterday's program when we were talking about perhaps some movement on the depth chart for slot corners and how that's Dion's strength, but, you know, his size is obviously a limitation. And, you know, the one thing that we did not talk about Dante Dion yesterday, Paul, was Spags spoke very highly of him, if you recall, during the course of training camp, just as they were finalizing the roster. And what Spags loved about Dion was he loved his work ethic. He loved the fact that the guy was coachable. The guy loved getting down and dirty.
High energy.
Yes, that's what he spoke very highly of. And that's a good thing. And I think he's going to have, to answer your question, I think he's going to have an opportunity to come back, compete with the team in training camp. But, you know, it's also a matter of, do they draft somebody at that position? And do they feel as if they could carve out a role for Dante Dion, specifically in the slot, Paul? Because, you know, if you're going to make this team, you have to show some versatility, whether it be on special teams or whether it be contributing in other areas, not necessarily just, hey, we're going to use you here, and that's the only thing that you can provide.
Well, if he's going to make the 53, I don't know that he's going to be able to play outside. He does have physical limitations. But if he can show that he can be a capable backup in the slot, that's going to be step one. I think he can, quite frankly. Number two, he's got to show he can deal on special teams. Now, that doesn't mean he's got to be a return guy. Obviously, they have return guys. He's got to show he can get down there on as a coverage guy on both kicks and punts. And he's also got to show that, you know what, if necessary, he could also be on the kick return and punt return team. I think he's got a better than 50-50 shot to make the 53. I really do. I love the kid. He was my dark horse last year of the undrafted rookie free agents, so you know I'm not jumping off the bandwagon. You know, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to stick with this guy. And I'm anxious to see him compete, and I think he can win a job. Now Pau is an interesting case because he certainly has the size. He's about 6'4", okay? Big guy, does not have blazing speed, but has a smooth stride. And in training camp, he did enough to show you that, hey, look at his build, look at his size and his length. He has some accomplished skills, but he was inconsistent in terms of getting the ball. You know, he'd make a nice catch, then maybe the next time down he'd drop one. And so they were intrigued enough to keep him on the practice squad, but he really was not a challenger to make the five wide receivers that the Giants eventually kept. It was five because they kept King, and they also kept Lewis.
Yeah.
And then they used Dwayne Harris as the kickoff specialist, kickoff return and punt return specialist. They didn't count him as a receiver when they divvied it up. He never really challenged, but did enough that they kept him around. So he's going to get a chance now this summer to challenge. He's going to have to make more wow plays in training camp and in the preseason, though, if he's going to make the 53. Do I think he has a chance? Yes. I think he's on the fringe. But he's going to have to be more consistent and maybe even a little bit more spectacular, too. Remember, you know this, Lance. We come to practice every day during training camp. When you start seeing a guy time after time after time, and you look back and you say, yeah, wow, you know what? Last week he made three or four really nice plays. That's what the coaches are thinking, too.
No doubt, yeah.
That helps you make the team.
Well, and if you just go off the top of your head, Paul, Tavares King, Roger Lewis, Darius Poe. Let's look at those three from last season.
The other two did.
The other two had those standout plays. If you were to ask me coming out of practice every day, you remember plays that King made down the field? You remember plays even that Roger Lewis made down the field?
Absolutely.
How many vertical opportunities did Lewis have where Eli Manning threw it down the field, or even Nassib, and Lewis came through it? Forget the games. I'm talking about practice.
Yes.
Poe did not have as much substance, so that's obviously why he was on the back end of that depth chart when you look at the three. Now, Victor Cruz's future, I think, could maybe change things up and open the door for one of these young guys to have an opportunity, but we'll have to see how free agency plays out.
Well, if they decide that indeed they do want a big receiver on this team, and I do think that's the way they should go, the question then becomes, okay, what kind of competition are you going to bring in, regardless of which receiver stays or goes? But then Powell is going to be that competition for that competition. you know, whoever it is.
Of course.
He'll be in that mix because that's what he is. He's a big, tall, skyscraping wide receiver.
But he's not necessarily automatically going to move up
just
because somebody leaves the
team.
No,
he's just going to have to battle.
Yeah, they're going to bring in some other competition as well. And Kyle, appreciate the phone call. It's a good question. Thanks so much for chiming in about, you know, who's on the practice squad. We tend to forget some of these guys. We don't talk much about them during
the season. And again, it's about not only making the plays, it's about running the right routes. It's about blocking for the run. It's about showing that you can do some things on special teams. Look, one of the primary reasons Roger Lewis made the team, in addition to being, in my mind, one of the best five receivers in camp, because I did have him making my 53 by the time camp was over, Roger Lewis did a very nice job in the coverage units on special teams. And that was something the Giants were very, very happy about during the course of the season. Even though when he got in there and he had some drop season, then King took some of his snaps away, Roger Lewis gave the Giants something extra on special teams in the coverage units. And that was so critical to keeping him on the active roster during the course of the season.
Now, I'm going to throw out another player. I don't necessarily think he was in the same position because he was a drafted rookie, but he's a player that I think stood out on special teams given his limitations as a linebacker, B.J. Goodson.
Without a doubt.
That's another guy that I would say, well, hey, he knew most of my opportunities are going to be on special teams. That's how I need to stand out, and that's what he took advantage of.
He was good. He was good, and the Giants are hoping that that will blossom then into maybe a bigger role this year.
Let's head back to the phone lines here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. We've got Ken in Trenton. Ken, what's happening?
Hey, Lance. Hey, Paul. How you guys doing?
Hi.
Today? Doing well, Ken. How's things with you?
Good. I read an article the other day on 24/7 Sports that said the wide receivers were unhappy with the vanilla play calling. I was just wondering if there was any truth to that.
Not that I know of.
Yeah, somebody actually asked the same question, Ken, I believe when John and I were hosting on Tuesday, and, you know, we haven't heard anything with respect to that. So, I mean, I've seen that story floating around, but, I mean, to tell you that there's substance behind it, nothing that I've heard would confirm it.
Yeah, I try not to give too many media personalities too much credit. The Giants signed a futures contract to an undrafted guy out of Trenton, New Jersey. He's a running back.
Yes.
I forget his name now, but I know someone that played against him in high school, and he said he's just a monster downhill guy. So that might be some good news. We need that kind of player, and maybe we already have him on the roster.
I'm looking at the roster right now because it just happened the other day. Apparently, this gentleman has an incredible story of hardship that goes with him. I'm trying to think now. Is it, let's see.
Well, coming out of Trenton, there's a lot of hardship in Trenton. There's no middle class or upper middle class.
Yeah, there's no question about that. You're right about that 100%. I'm looking for his name. Can you find him, Dave?
Dave, you put it in the document. Let me see. He may have put it up here to take a glance. Here we go. No, but that's...
Daryl Verges from Virginia Lynchburg?
Yeah, that's it.
That's the man, yeah. What I heard about him, and again, I apologize for not getting the name off the top of my head. What I did hear about him, he is very quick. He is very athletic. He, of course, is just, I mean, foaming at the mouth for a chance because he didn't know if he was going to have a career at all and is just ecstatic that the Giants were able to sign him. Now, he had some tryouts with a few other teams. I believe the Eagles, the Jets. Several other teams brought him in for some looks. Ultimately, he landed here with the Giants. I don't know what his odds are. I'm really be anxious to see, as with all these futures guys, once they get out on the field when the Giants get back here in the spring, I'll be anxious to see some of these folks. But, you know, it's a name you certainly want to put in the back of your head, if for no other reason, because he has beaten monumental odds. I don't want to go too deep into this. I think there was a shooting involved where he may have been injured at one point. So it's a long shot story and certainly one that you want to keep tabs on.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially because he's from New Jersey. Maybe he'll give that little extra effort to stay close to home. And,
well, you know what they say, Jersey tough.
Yeah. I mean, I'm from Trenton. I work my butt off. Hopefully he does too, and hopefully he makes the team. Thanks for taking my call, guys.
All right, Ken.
Sure thing.
Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in.
Yeah, here's the story from the Trentonian, which talks about well, I'm going to read this paragraph because I really don't want to be misquoted. The story by David Foster of the Trentonian says, the Trenton native spent 10 months of his early life behind bars, hustled drugs on the streets to make a quick buck, and grew up in extreme poverty. So says the Trentonian. So you're talking about an incredible long shot of a guy who really can't wait to make something with his life after tremendous hardship at the beginning of his early steps. So, wow.
Well, spring workouts is going to tell a lot about some of these younger guys and how realistic a chance they have to make the roster. Remember, it goes to 90, so there's plenty of opportunities for the Giants to fill up the roster. And then, obviously, as we get closer to the end of training camp, they finally get it down to 53. Let's head back to the phone lines. We got Tim in Orlando. Tim, what's happening?
Hello?
Hey, Tim.
My call.
Yeah, you got it. Thanks for making it.
Tim, you going to the Pro Bowl?
No, I want to. We couldn't get tickets. I should, though.
Is it sold out?
No, honestly, when I could have bought the tickets for cheaper like a month ago, I just assumed we'd be in the Super Bowl. So I was like, oh, I'm not buying tickets for the Pro Bowl. The Giants won't be playing in it.
What were they going for, by the way? I've never been to the Pro Bowl.
I don't even know. Okay. I honestly don't even know. But I was wondering about free agency. I love JP. I'm seeing a bunch of different numbers on the cap space.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure which one is correct. I've seen different ones from different sources. But, I mean, I love JPP. He's such a great story and a great leader. But I was wondering, just hypothetically, if you had to choose between re-signing JPP or signing a stud offensive tackle, which would it be? And I know there's a chance we could get both, and there's a chance neither could happen, and that there's not a bunch of good offensive tackles in free agency, but just play hypothetically. If you had to choose between those two options, which would you guys do?
Well, I mean, I think you pretty much answered it by saying that there's really not many stud offensive tackles in free agency. So I know you're painting a hypothetical, but I don't even think the hypothetical really is going to add up. And it's no disrespect to the offensive linemen that are out there, but I don't know if I'd classify anyone realistically that's going to be out there as a stud or a game-changing franchise type of player.
Whitworth is 35 years old, and that in itself is going to hurt his price. And he is by far, he was just named to the Pro Bowl, by the way. By far
he's
the best
guy,
left tackle available.
But, you know, we're talking about if you're going to go out and spend money in free agency, you're probably going to spend it on somebody that's a bit younger that you're going to build upon moving forward.
Correct.
So I wouldn't classify him.
Although Whitworth wants to get paid, trust me.
And I'm sure that he and everybody else has the same type of mindset, and I'm sure the Bengals are probably going to want to at least consider keeping him because, you know, they feel like their window is still very much open. They have a young quarterback and some young pieces. But, I mean, to go with your hypothetical, if you would look – at least look at it from the Giants' perspective. You know, what JPP has been able to overcome is pretty impressive. He showed you that now that he played a full season, he was very effective. He doesn't get enough credit as a run stopper. I've said that throughout the course of his career. But I guess if you're the Giants, just to look at it from the flip side here, Paul,
okay,
do you say to yourself, based on what they saw from maybe some of the younger defensive ends, that if there was any position that maybe they can lose somebody in free agency, defensive end is something that they could digest? And what I mean, guys like Romeo Okwara, moving around Devon Kennard and bringing him down to the line. My point is they've had some younger options that Spags has toyed with.
Do they
feel as if they hypothetically lost a star defensive end, is there enough depth currently on the roster that they could make up for it as opposed to losing somebody else at another position?
It's a two-pronged question. It is how are you going to make up for the loss of JPP as opposed to what kind of value are you going to get if you spend big money on a left tackle? Really, it's a two-pronged question. And I think that I don't know, you know, I think Reef from the Lions to me would be a more economically better decision if you're going to go out and sign a left tackle. There are reports online he's going to want between $6 and $8 million a year. And I think that's probably reasonable, and that would not break your bank. So if you did that, you know, I don't know that that makes it impossible to then sign one of your own guys to a big-ticket deal. So I think maybe your question then becomes irrelevant if you're going to ignore Whitworth. Now, if you really want to ask a tough question, you got to ask what do you do between Hankins and JPP? That's a more difficult question, but it's also a more realistic question given the parameters of what you're talking about.
Well, but you know what? You brought up an interesting point there because it goes back to what I was alluding to is the fact that if you lost Hankins – do you feel you have as much depth compared to if you lost JPP and who's behind him. Well, that, I think, is an interesting way to look at it.
And that becomes a huge issue because then you also have to talk to yourself and say, well, is there another guy we can pick up for a cheaper price in free agency, which will help that depth? What is available in the draft? Do we think we can get an edge rusher, or do we think we can get another defensive tackle in the draft? There are a lot of questions here. I mean, we're talking mega moving parts. So I don't know that your answer really gets your question gets a quick answer here. I just think it's a very complicated answer, which is going to take time to sort out. I mean, it's just not that easy.
Well, there's a lot of factors that you need to take into consideration, Tim. I think it's an interesting question. It's something that I'm sure the Giants have to think about depending on what position they want to prioritize. The one thing I will add that we at least we could go by is on the record is Jerry Reese was asked at his end of the season press conference,
yes,
is it realistic to think, based on the current cap situation, that they could bring back JPP and Hankins? That doesn't necessarily answer your question, Tim, about the offensive line, but at
right.
least, is it realistic to bring back your top two defensive linemen? His response was, it is realistic to think that as the cap currently stands, they could bring back both.
I would add one other thing, okay? I do believe that there are enough of teams who have a lot more cap room than the Giants do this year who would probably be very desperate to get a 4-3 edge pass rusher as JPP and will probably be more than willing to overpay whatever the market bears for him. And I don't think the Giants will chase up the economic ladder to try to retain him if somebody just gives him the keys to Fort Knox and says, we're just going to give you an outstanding blow-em kind of out-of-the-water number. I just don't think that's going to happen.
Now, the franchise tag is something that's still in play, not just for JPP. You could do it.
He already said he wouldn't sign it,
I know he said it's on the record, but it's still an option based on the rules and regulations in the NFL. And the other thing is,
you do that, though, and he doesn't sign it, then you tie up that money.
Of course. That's why. But I'm just throwing it out
there. And then you don't have a player.
It's certainly something that you can utilize in terms of the rules and regulations. It doesn't mean that it's the most effective
right.
thing, depending on what the player is looking at it. But I do think that if you look at the NFL landscape, and this goes back to what you were touching on, Paul. It's very rare that game-changing defensive ends, franchise left tackles hit the market.
Exactly.
It's very rare in this day and age because most teams lock those guys up. They give them extensions so that they never hit free agency. So this is almost uncharted territory when you have a guy of his caliber that actually now has the opportunity to test the market.
And by the way, just in case you're wondering, the estimates say that the Jets and Cowboys are the only two teams that are way over the cap. Just so you want to know.
And the cap,
so don't worry about them.
Yes, and the cap, by the way, is going to go up, which it normally has done each and every season. So you have to factor in that every team's going to get a little bit of a bump once the new league year begins. They'll then obviously compute all the new numbers and so forth.
Yeah, I know Jerry Reese said it was realistic to re-sign both of them, and I would love to do that. But what I don't want to do is, like you said, spend way too much on JPP. And I don't want to get them both back and then do absolutely nothing with the offense. I don't want to come back with the same offense.
Well, Tim, remember, you can address whatever you don't do in free agency, you can address in the draft. Keep that in mind. I mean, I understand you're maybe coming from the perspective you want to get the flashy name, the proven commodity. I get that. It's a little bit more comfortable to know what a player has done in the NFL as opposed to what a player could potentially do coming out of the draft. But if they, let's say, they just shore up the defense and they make sure they bring everybody back in free agency, they can easily address the offense in the draft. That's all I'm going to say.
And remember one other
Paul
thing.
Said something.
Okay, I was only going to say, remember one other thing. The numbers that are being estimated now, they will change because there will be some veterans on every team that are apt to be released. There will also be veterans on every team that may wind up getting renegotiated deals, which will lower their numbers.
Yeah,
so,
like the Josh Sitton situation from last year. No one would have expected him to be released.
Well, that was very late. That was even after the 53 was finalized. I think, Paul, what you were talking about, there's a guy who's going to be released as free agency starts.
Yes, sure.
But Josh Sitton is an example of after the 53 was finalized, and it's about 3 days before the season starts, which happens as well.
I think Paul said something either yesterday or a couple days ago about Eddie Lacy, and that really intrigued me. I'd just be curious how much he would cost. And then another tackle I was thinking about was kind of an under-the-radar guy, Ricky Wagner from Baltimore. He's a right tackle.
Strictly a right tackle.
Left tackle, so we can push Flowers to the right. but I'd just be curious, how would that play out if we signed a right tackle?
Yeah, the problem with Ricky Wagner, he is strictly a right tackle. Now, one of the writers here in New York was writing today a speculation deal about what could the Giants do with the offensive line, and he lumped in Wagner with Reef of the Lions as right tackle. See, that's incorrect. Reef played right tackle this year, but previously in his career with Detroit, he was a left tackle. They moved him to the right side because they didn't think economically they could hold on to him very long. They figured they'd lose him in free agency, so they groomed Taylor Decker to be their starting left tackle this season.
He's a rookie.
And I get that. So that's not a knock on Reef. Reef is a starting caliber left tackle in this league. He does not belong in the same box as Wagner does. Wagner is strictly a right tackle. And if you're the Giants, I don't think you go out and you sign strictly a right tackle at this point if you're considering what Jerry Reese said about possibly moving Flowers to the right side. Then you got to sign a guy for the left. Now, if, it's a big if, and none of us know the answer to this, if Eric Flowers is getting coached up and tutored up on his own before the players come back to the facility in April, and he matures and really polishes up his technique and proves that he can be a good left tackle in this league, well, that's not something you're going to know now. You're going to need a few months to figure that out. Maybe by then, okay, maybe you believe, and then he stays there, and then maybe you do sign a Wagner if he's still available in free agency and plug in a brand-new right tackle. Maybe you do that.
Yeah, you want to see what happens over the course of the spring to further evaluate what you want to necessarily do with Flowers, and that's why I think if you do bring in a tackle in free agency, there's value in making sure that that tackle has experience on the left and the right side.
That's why.
This way, you don't have to worry about if come June you decide you want to move Flowers, you know then the other tackle you brought in hypothetically can easily shift from the left and the right. So I think versatility at the tackle position, if that's somewhere they want to go, is important, especially if you don't know at this point what you want to do with Flowers.
Which is why I'm not going to box Wagner and Reef in the same box. You can't do it. It's just wrong.
Tim, appreciate it. Yeah. You got something else, Tim?
Oh, no, I was just going to ask. I was going to say that makes sense, and I would love to see Eric Flowers improve. That would be the dream scenario. But is there a certain cap number that you absolutely don't go below if you're the Giants in this offseason? And I'll take this off the air. Thank you, guys.
Well, there is a minimum cap number that every team must spend, if that's what you're asking. I mean, that's part of the CBA.
There's a floor.
Yeah, every team must spend the floor. The Giants will never get to that floor. I mean, they're always going to spend over that. That you don't have to worry about that. This team does what it has to do to try to get a winner on the field. I would tell you this, based on the salaries in 2016, Eddie Lacy, of the free agents who were coming available, he's at about 12, 15. He's probably about the 20th highest paid running back who is available in free agent this year based on the 2016 salaries. So I don't know what kind of numbers he's going to want. I personally believe that he's a good fit for what the Giants have in the backfield right now. I think he's a good complement to what they could do with Perkins, and I would be intrigued by him. But that's simply a quick opinion. It's a little early, but that's the kind of guy I'd like to see matched up with Perkins.
Well, and keep this in mind. When you're looking at Eddie Lacy's finances, he's coming off his rookie contract. He has yet to hit free agency. So
also
that's
been
why,
hurt.
Yeah, and he's been hurt. But that's why his salary, I think, is on the low side when you look at the rankings of free agents. A lot of the guys that are ahead of him have already tested the free agent market. They're established veterans. They've made bigger contracts. Whereas Lacy's now going to have an opportunity to test the market for the first time ever in his career.
Of course, his first 2 years in the league were his best.
And then, obviously, he was plagued by injuries, weight issues, and so forth, which are all things you have to evaluate when you look at free agents.
And trust me,
it's not just one
when
season.
GMs call his agent, those things will affect those numbers.
No doubt. Or there'll be contracts that are built with incentives,
right?
Show me type of contract. We want to bring you in. You have intrigue. You have potential, but you got to show me.
Yep.
We don't want to necessarily lock you up with a lot of guaranteed money. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. We got Len in Columbia, Maryland. Len, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hi, Len.
Good, good, good. Listen, how many days between now and opening day? Oh man, this
Got
is going
time.
To be a long hog, sitting around sitting around waiting for the 2017 season. Not that we have any choice in it. Hey,
no.
Hey, listen, Paul, I was kind of interested in your comment about JPP. I just wanted to add a couple of qualifiers. You know, not everybody is going to be in the market for JPP. It's not like there are 32 teams, and it goes beyond the cap, you know, the cap number. First of all, you got to be a 4-3 team, not a 3-4 team.
Right.
Second of all, what is he? 6 years into the league.
He's 28 years old.
Are you going to give a guy before you think you can get to the Super Bowl, even the playoffs?
I mean, I'm going to take a guess.
High caliber. You know, it has got to be a pretty good team to take on that kind of contract.
I'm going to guess, Len, that he's going to want at least a 3-year deal. Right? I think that's fair to say, based on his comments when he left here the other day. He's not going to take a 1-year deal. I don't think taking two is very productive. He's going to want at least 3, probably 4 or 5. And he's 28 years old. Now, I agree with what you're saying. Not everybody can be in the market for him, but all it takes is one team.
Right. That's all it takes.
One team to say, we're going to give him the Brinks truck.
Yeah.
And he's gone.
It can be, you know, some owner goes crazy. You know, you're Cleveland at 1-15, and the owner thinks JPP will get you to the Super Bowl. Well, it ain't going to happen.
Well, let me make it simple for you. Did you honestly believe when Linval Joseph got the deal he got from the Vikings, did you believe that was fair market value? The answer is no. It was way above. That's not to say Linval Joseph is not a terrific defensive tackle and was on his way to being a Pro Bowl player, but his number that he got from the Vikings was way, way out of line.
Yeah,
you can't chase that.
You know, one of the things about the Joseph signing, guys, and you, I think you can apply that to JPP. What didn't Linville do that caused us to let him go? What hasn't JPP done that would cause us? I mean, not to go crazy. I mean, we're not going to pay him $20 million a year, but I think he's in the Vernon ballpark. Now, if you can't pay your defensive ends, total defensive ends, that much money, I mean, I understand that. But, you know, you have to ask yourself in the end, what hasn't this guy done for us? I mean, what else can he do? I mean, he's a darn good football player.
He's versatile. Gets to the quarterback and also stops the run. I think that's been
proven. Yeah, I mean, it's just, you look at it and you say, well, you know, what else do we want out of this guy? I mean, that's the kind of – and he plays, you know, if you want to look at it from a productivity standpoint, you know, like a worker working 40 hours a week, the guy plays 3 downs. And, you know, he really comes off the field. I mean,
Len, in terms of
dollar value,
Len,
that's a pretty good player.
I don't think there's any question. Look.
You know, the guy's on the field all the time.
I don't think there's any question. The Giants are a better team with him than without him. Even though the last month of the season, you know, they were able to still do some pretty good things without him. They are a better team with him. I think the players would like to see him back. I think the coaches would like to see him back. I think front office would like to see him back. I know I want to see him back. And I think he wants to come back.
Well,
but
there you go.
If
there you
one
go, Paul.
Team.
I was going to add that if you had forgotten to add that.
But if
one team. I think he'd like to be back, Paul.
Yeah, but if one team gives him the Brinks truck, can you blame him if he goes?
Yeah, yeah.
That's
I mean,
all
this
it takes.
This is the kind of guy, I don't want to say he's once in a lifetime because you've seen a lot of great defensive ends with the Giants.
Oh.
But, I mean, this is a guy, he's supposed to play his whole career with the Giants. I mean, these are guys who aren't supposed to.
You could have said that about Tuck. You could have said that about OC.
Yeah.
Thank goodness we were able to say that about Michael.
Yeah, there you go.
You know,
but
it didn't happen for OC or Tuck.
I like the Falcons and the Patriots. I don't think Green Bay is going to be able to keep up with that speed this weekend in Atlanta. And I think next Monday morning we're going to be talking a lot about the Antonio Brown situation. I think Pittsburgh right now has got a morale problem. I know Tomlin's a great coach and he's a fighter and he brings these guys back. I like Tomlin. He's got that Western Pennsylvania attitude just like our coach does. He's a tough guy, but boy, I just don't think going into New England with the mindset that I think they're going to go in there with, they're going to have a tough time.
Well, I think if there's any team in the AFC that could give New England a tough time, I think it is Pittsburgh. So the Patriots, to me, have the toughest task of any of the other teams that maybe they were hoping to go up against. Kansas City, I would have put second, but I think Pittsburgh has a more explosive offense. So, you know, the Steelers are capable of going into Foxborough and putting some points on the board. I don't think that anybody would doubt that. But, yeah, New England should be considered the favorite. They've been by far the most consistent team, and I don't think their defense has gotten a lot of credit. They had the number one scoring defense.
Okay, I think they got a lot on their mind up there. You know, it amazes me how the average person can't figure this out. Three rules in the workplace, and I don't care if you're a pro football player or you're going to work down at the grocery store this afternoon. Show up on time. Do your job. Don't embarrass the boss. I mean, it's pretty simple. Holy cow.
Well, are you referring to the Antonio Brown video on Facebook?
That's
what you're referring
anything. To? You could look at the Odell Beckham situation.
And I get that, but I also feel that in the media, we tend to make a little bit more than it needs to be about some of these issues. Like, I'll give you another example. Matt Ryan and the Falcons were asked about Kyle Shanahan. I don't know if you heard the reports. It looks like the Niners are going to offer him the head coaching gig, right? So they can't offer him based on NFL rules until the Falcons season is over. But, you know, the story still gets out and so forth. So Matt Ryan and company have been asked all week. I've been seeing the pressers. I've been watching what's been going on in Atlanta. Is it a distraction? Are you worried that Kyle Shanahan's not focused on what the Green Bay defense is presenting and so forth? And, you know, Matt Ryan said it's not a problem. Not that we'd expect him to say anything different, but the Falcons are who they are at this point. And they're established. They're the number one offense. They've been consistent. I feel as if because it's the media and now there's only one game in each conference, we tend to find one narrative. We build it up and we make more than it is. These guys are professionals.
Okay.
They have structured schedules.
That's a very good point.
I don't think much is going to change.
There's no question about that. I think let me just say one other point. A general rule of thumb that I've used over the years, you make the Pro Bowl the first half of the season. You make all pro the second half of the season.
Interesting thought.
Yeah, that is interesting. The surge late in the season. It's possible.
Yeah, the surge
late
votes, in the season.
The votes build
the, you know,
up early in the season.
So early.
That's fair.
I mean, it just starts so early. And I think that's what hurt Harrison. It wasn't until we got to about midseason where everybody started to, you know, look at snacks and say, holy cow. But by that time, he wasn't getting the votes, and he didn't have the reputation. But by the end of the season, he sure as heck did have the reputation. I mean, it was, you know, it was certainly big time. And I think, you know, if you have a big Thanksgiving day, I think, you know, I mean, Hargraves had a better second half than he did first half.
I agree with you.
And
that's why I said the Bucs
writers,
defense.
The writers noted that. I mean, that he came along at the end, that he was starting, and he had a little swagger. You know, that kind of thing. Tampa was doing good. Everybody was watching their games, paying attention. I think second half of the season is when you make all pro. The first half is when you make the Pro Bowl. As far as the draft goes, follow Jerry Reese. Wherever Jerry goes, there's a player there. Hey, guys. Hey, thanks for taking my call. It's always great to talk
to you.
Take care,
Len.
Sounds
great
good. Appreciate talking to you as well. Thanks so much for weighing in. It's an interesting observation on the part of Len about you earn the all-pro nod second half of the season. And you look at, if you use the Giants as an example, you know, Landon Collins jumped right out of the gates.
Yes.
The chatter was high. The votes were coming in. Landon Collins, look at the stats he's putting up. He led the team in three different categories. And then, you know, as the season progressed and you saw the continuity in stopping the run, then, you know, some of the guys on the defensive line, JPP got hurt. Snacks gets a little more notoriety. I think even if you examine the Giants based on that criteria that Len threw out, that's a very interesting point. Mm-hmm. That Snacks got a little bit more attention once JPP got hurt and people started to look at the Giants' defense overall. Landon got the early surge, and that helped him in the voting regard
and so
forth. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. Another one of our regulars, and speaking of Pennsylvania, they build up these guys like Mike Tomlin and Ben McAdoo. Well, they also produce Joe in Pennsylvania. Joe, what's happening?
Hey, Joe.
Hey, hi, guys. Great to talk to you. Just talking about them awards and ratings or so, I was listening to a Philly station here, and, you know, they were talking about their front seven on defense being rated number two, and the sportscasters were laughing. They said, they don't even have the Giants in there, and that, you know, they were just laughing about it. That's all. I don't know who rated them or something, but they had their front seven rated second, you know, like they wouldn't give a bucket of beans for him. So,
well, wait, I'm a little lost though, Joe. You said the Eagles' defensive front was ranked number two?
Front seven, they said, was rated number two, and they didn't even have the Giants in the top 10.
Well, but who did these rankings, just out of curiosity?
I don't know. It was I'm not sure. I forget who it was, whoever did the rankings there. So, anyway, did we sign an offensive center, a veteran, yesterday or no?
Yeah, from the Colts, supposedly. The report came out. Let me see if I can find it for you. It was a former Colts draft pick who was highly thought of when he came in. Unfortunately, underperformed and underwhelmed with the Colts. And the Giants, apparently, according to the report, did we have any confirmation on that, Dave?
I don't know if we have confirmed
it. Is it Reeves?
I know there was a report.
Holmes? Khalil Holmes? Is there confirmation on that?
I don't think we may have made a formal announcement, but yes, he was with the Colts. Here we go. Khalil Holmes. That based on the report, it was a reserve futures deal. But it's a report. I don't believe that the Giants have announced anything officially. And I don't even know if the team does announce officially whether or not, you know, they've signed any reserve futures contracts at this point. But there is a report out there. That's all that at least
I believe it was seen. USA Today had announced it. You know, look, if that in fact is the case, you can't have enough guys to compete on the backup roles or the offensive line. I mean, we know the Giants need to fortify their starters, but if this guy can compete as a backup, look, I like Brett Jones, but Brett Jones is versatile. He can play guard. He's already proven he can play guard in this league. So if the Giants can add another interior offensive lineman to the depth chart, why not?
Yeah, I heard that. Now, you were talking earlier. Did you say the Jets? And did you say the Cowboys have the highest cap room?
No, they're over. The Jets and the Cowboys,
okay,
by most
God.
Estimates, are over the cap.
Because I'd say both of them would jump on JPP. They'd like the Jets would like to pay us back for getting Harrison. And you think the Cowboys wouldn't want JPP up there in their line? Oh, my God. Now, I want to ask, too, I did hear that Leary, their offensive
Ronald
guard.
Ronald Leary from the Cowboys is a free agent, yes.
Yeah,
no, you're right
so,
about
I
that.
I mean, how do you think of him? You know, now he might get some good bucks, you know.
He wants to. I'm sure he wants to cash in. He actually proved extremely valuable for the Cowboys because, if you recall, Lyle Collins, their starting guard, went down. And the fact that they didn't trade Leary, there was speculation they were going to move Leary to the Browns for Josh McCown. They chose not to make that deal. Collins gets hurt. Leary gets his starting job back, and that helps solidify their offensive line. Yeah. And, you know, Leary's been a backup. He's been a starter. I think that there's a lot of value in a player like that, and I'm sure he wants to cash in.
Is he a decent run blocker?
Yeah, he's overall a pretty good, versatile offensive lineman. Based on what I've seen, I think, though, he's better in pass protection than run blocking.
He's a guard, too.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah, well, I didn't know anything that's going to strengthen us. I didn't know. I was just wondering about him, you know, and that's all. I guess he's prime age, about 28 or something like that. So.
I believe he's in that neck of the woods. I'll look that up to be specific, but I believe that's his range. Let's see. He was 27.
I don't know. I don't know if he's better, that much better than Jerry or not, but it's just something, you know what I mean? You were talking about tackles, and this was a guard I did see that was up there. Too,
understand the economics of that, though, Joe. You would think that John Jerry's not going to be overwhelmed with a big-time offer. He seems very happy and satisfied here, and he's been pretty darn good in pass protection. So to be honest, that, to me, in terms of economic sense, would not pay off for the Giants to be paying somebody big-time money to come in from the outside.
Yeah. Especially if you have somebody internally who you've already evaluated and knows your system. And remember, you got to think of the finances here. Not that we don't think the Giants are going to have any money, but, you know, we've already talked about bringing back JPP and Hankins, maybe going after a tackle based on some of the calls we fielded. You know, where is guard on the list, and how much money do you have left, Joe, once you get to that position? You have to at least think about that.
I don't care what they do. I would like, as you were talking earlier, I'd like to see Flowers to get wherever he had to go and to get moving them feet. That's the main thing. Really, he has to learn to move his feet to stay in front of people. And just with his size, he should be good. But that's what he has to do, really. Use the feet and get the arms out there. It's just easy to see. Hey, whatever it takes to get that offensive line fixed, because we know that's number one. And then you were talking about the running back from Green Bay, too. But, you know, it is a big question with him because he's injury prone, you know. So even the Packers will have to decide whether or not they'd sign him, you know. So, hey, thanks for calling. Let's go Giants, whatever. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi, Joe. Appreciate the call.
I got a tweet here from James Jones who asks about Latavius Murray. No, the Twitter fan.
I hear you.
Wants to know about Latavius Murray, who obviously fits the power back description.
The Raiders running back.
He has made comments already that he would like to re-sign with the Raiders. I've already responded to James online. I think any power back, young stud power back that you compare with Perkins, much like what they did with Bradshaw and Jacobs, would be the way to go. So certainly I would, you know, if it were me, he would be on the radar for me as an unrestricted free agent. But again, if I'm the Raiders, why would I want to let him get out of there?
No, not at all. I mean, they did draft DeAndre Washington.
Yeah.
So they have him on the books. But I'll be honest with you. I look at Murray, and he's capable of getting 15 to 20 carries a game. I just don't look at him as the back we were talking about bringing in to complement Paul Perkins. If anything, I think DeAndre Washington is that bigger back on Oakland.
Murray's a pretty big dude.
I just, once again, I still think of him more of similar to Perkins, that shifty type of back, as opposed to,
right,
you know, you were talking about an Eddie Lacy. We brought up Mike Allstott yesterday. We were talking about that.
I'm not into the Allstott comparisons,
but I brought him up as a style
Lacy,
of runner.
Lacy's a guy who I just think would fit really great.
Correct. That north type of runner, as opposed to somebody like Perkins, who you know can run to the edge and break tackles and so forth. So, you know, listen, Murray's an extremely talented back. Don't get me wrong.
Good player.
But if you're going to look at a compliment to Perkins, I think there's a little bit too much duplication between perhaps
both of
those running
backs. Bigger guy, though.
He is a bigger guy.
But I understand. The style isn't as contrasting as Lacy's is.
Well, because I'll go back to, and, you know, correct me if I'm misquoting you, Paul. You know, you brought up the Jacobs Bradshaw.
Yes. No, that's
analogy.
Clearly what I'd like
yesterday to
do.
And that's and what I'm trying to
Lacy is
well.
More like Jacobs.
Exactly.
No question.
Yeah.
No
so that's,
question.
That's what I was
I agree
going
with, that.
With based on your preface and so forth. Do you see anything else in terms of Twitter here as we near the
Well, you
end
know,
of the
we had a couple here that, you know, someone asking me about Whitworth and suggesting that at 35 years old, he's not going to get the kind of cash perhaps that he would like, and that may put him in the Giants' price range. You know, I think he is definitely going to want to go to the bank, especially after going to the Pro Bowl this year.
Well, and I think that if you're going to invest money in an offensive lineman,
do you want to do one who's 35?
There you go. Now, Reef makes a little bit more sense.
He's only 27,
in terms of
I believe.
His age, and then because if you're going to invest in an offensive lineman, I think you also want to say to yourself, there's potential to have him be a part of the line moving forward.
Well, that's it. Whitworth is a stopgap.
Yeah.
If you sign Whitworth, you got him for a year or two, and then you got to believe you're moving on.
Well, and then you're back to square one, though. That's my point. Because remember, you have Richburg, you have Pugh, you have Flowers. I know they may move him around. That's all speculation.
And you have Bobby Hart if you think he's part of your future, too.
So you got four guys we just ran off that are young. They're not up there in age.
Mid-20s.
They're still growing as offensive linemen. So if I'm going to bring in another piece, I want to bring in that piece who I think now can come with those four.
I agree with
you. And move forward with that group.
I totally agree with you.
As opposed to you bring in a veteran and then you say, all right, 2 years from now, we got to go back to square one. Now, I'm sure there's a lot of fans listening and they're going, well, wait a minute. You know, Eli Manning, his window, you can maybe look at it from you could bring in a guy for 1 or 2 years. But I also think that, yes, that's nice, but you also want to think about moving forward and building the team. Because remember, look at the defensive nucleus right now, Paul, of this team. You know, there's some young guys that they just brought in on defense as well.
There is a flip side to this. I happen to be on the same page as you with this. We agree. But there is a flip side. To the guy who wants to argue against that, he will point to the 2000 Giants, who during that offseason signed three starting offensive linemen, Glenn Parker, Dusty Ziegler, and Lomas Brown. And the Giants went to the Super Bowl that year with three free agent offensive linemen. They ripped up the entire line. They put three new guys in. They were all veterans. Okay. Ziegler wound up hurting his knee a year or so later and was out of the league. Lomas Brown played terrific. Should have gone to the Pro Bowl in 2000. But then when he came back in 2001, he was pretty much shot. And the drop-off in his play was noticeable. Parker, same situation. Played well for them that 2000 season, but then there was really no juice left in the orange, and his drop-off was very dramatic and very quick as well. So that by the time 2001 came around, the Giants had a problem now because these three guys who they signed who helped get them to a Super Bowl was suddenly not helping them get many more wins. And that's what happens when you sign older offensive linemen to plug in. That becomes now a revolving door and a problem that you constantly have to fix. That's the flip side to what Lance and I are talking about. But can you argue with the fact that the Giants did get to a Super Bowl by doing it that way once?
I guess, at least from my philosophy, this is my own philosophy, I like the combination of thinking short-term and long-term simultaneously.
In a perfect world, I think you do. But
that's
see,
how I would go about
it. At that time, Ernie Accorsi looked at the Giants and said, this offensive line's an absolute disaster. And we got to do something about this. And Kerry Collins was the quarterback. Tiki Barber was the lead halfback, remember? They were like, they had Dane in there, Thunder and Lightning.
Yep.
You know, they were really looking to make some hay with that team. And so he said, okay, quick fix on the offensive line. Let's sign three veterans. He signed two guys who were practically shot, but gave them one really terrific season. And Ziegler, who was a younger guy, but got hurt. And so, again, within a year, year and a half, they had to rebuild again. That line was another shambles.
Now, real quickly before we wrap up, this actually story just came out on ESPN. Adrian Peterson made an appearance on ESPN.
I didn't even want to deal with that.
Well,
I had gotten a tweet on it, too.
There was a tweet. That's why I just wanted to throw it out.
He's best with the Vikings. He really is.
Well, they have to determine what they want to do based on his finances, but supposedly he said that if he doesn't stay with Minnesota, he would consider the Texans, the Bucks, and he also threw out the Giants there. So we did receive a lot of questions and comments and so forth. Now, Peterson obviously would meet the criteria of what you and I were talking about, that bigger back, but remember, he's not a clear free agent at this point. So all of this is speculation, and based on what he's saying, Minnesota, the ball is in their court in terms of what they want to do with his contract and, you know, Teddy Bridgewater's health and Sam Bradford and so forth. So, I mean, right now it's a big hypothetical considering he's not due to be a free agent.
Yeah. By the way, award winners that just came out just a few seconds ago, the Pro Football Writers Association has named GM Reggie McKenzie as the NFL Executive of the Year. Jason Garrett is the NFL's Coach of the Year. And then yesterday, we failed to mention this, they named their NFL MVP and their Offensive Player of the Year, Matt Ryan, and their Defensive Player of the Year was Khalil Mack.
And Khalil Mack, remember, tied an NFL record. He had eight straight games with at least one sack.
He's very good.
I think that's fair. Based on those numbers, you're going out on a limb there, Paul. Classifying is very good, but I think we're in agreement there as to why he earned that award. So then the overall NFL awards are going to be given out during the ceremony right before the Super Bowl.
Correct.
So we will have plenty to talk about as we build up to the big game in Houston. And Big Blue Kickoff Live continues all throughout the offseason. There will be a program tomorrow to wrap up the week at noon Eastern here on Giants.com. And we'll be back up and running on Monday as Paul and I will take you through Monday's program. Tomorrow you'll have John Schmelk as well as Jeff Fiegels. With that being said, we appreciate all the phone calls, all the chatter on Twitter. Keep them coming all offseason long. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday right here on Giants.com.